So as it is seen from my title, I am going to speak about collective phenomena and RIC and LHC. And to be more precise, I would like to discuss collective phenomena in the Parton system, which is created at the very early stage of the collision, when there are many partons, but these partons are very far from equilibrium. And I would like to discuss three physical phenomena. The first is screening in such a non-equilibrium system. Then I would like to discuss plasmon modes, and I will focus my attention on specific mode, which is unstable and grows exponentially in time. And at the end, I would like to say a few words about quasi-quark excitations, which appear to be very, very different than gluon excitations. To discuss this phenomena, of course, I need theoretical tools, and these theoretical tools for me is first kinetic theory, which is much more familiar for me, but it appears that the same results can be obtained with a new diagrammatic approach, which I will also mention. So first, I should start with a certain cartoon of high-energy collisions to exactly explain what I am going to do. So we have a very high-energy collision of two nuclei. And what is important that we know that we have a part of the interaction is perturbative. So perturbative interaction, we produce many partons with PT higher than, say, 2 GV. It is a certain absolute minimum PT that it is still reasonable to speak about perturbative phenomena. But on top of it, we have, of course, non-perturbative part, which is usually modeled with strings. And in my analysis, I take into account only this perturbative part that is simply partons in big numbers. Pardon?
Saturation your modeling.
Yeah. No. But it might be, maybe I should include this there because many quantities essentially depend on density. So this saturation would give me certain limits. I haven't tried this, but I think it's a good idea to try. No, I average only this part on part, but as you said, I take to have numerical estimates, I took numbers from models, from kind of Parton cascade from Hijink model. But presumably you are right that I should include this upper limit provided by saturation density. So what is important, very important for my story is that momentum distribution of partons is very much, so I have partons essentially after first collision. So my parton distribution is very much elongated along the beam axis. And is polynomial, there is polynomial, inverse polynomial distribution in PT. So say this power of inverse PT is about 6. So, and I would like to describe what happens in such a system. In my real calculations, I assume that I have flat rapidity distribution. Yes, but it's not important for me till now. Huh? It's, as I understand, perturbative QCD. After first collision, we have something like 6. It is also not very important. Everything what will be important for me is that average PT is much smaller than longitudinal. Yeah, so. So, and now my main theoretical tool is a transport theory of quarks and gluons. So I should say a few words. So quarks are 3 by 3. Distribution function of quarks is 3 by 3 matrix, and the same holds for anti-quarks. And distribution function for gluons is 8 by 8. And there are gauged these two quantities. Distribution functions, they don't have usual probabilistic interpretation because they are gauge dependent. And what And we have probabilistic interpretation when we take traces, and then when we take traces, it means that we sum over all possible colors. And having distribution functions, we can express most of interesting quantities through this distribution functions. And what is important when we discuss quantities which are independent of, which are summed over colors, then these quantities like baryon current or energy momentum tensor are expressed only through traces of distribution functions. But when you have such a quantity like color current, then there are not only trace which enters the expression, but there are also distribution functions by itself. And then, as the baryon current and energy momentum tensor are evidently gauge independent, this quantity, color current, depends on gauge. Yes, if you fix the gauge, yes. But if not, then the question, for example, what is the probability to find a red quark somewhere in phase space is gauge dependent, because changing the gauge, we change the color. So there is kind of rotation.
Yeah, but, it should be
yeah, but once we fix, yes, once you fix the gauge, then. And now we have transport equations. And in green, I wrote the transport equation for electromagnetic case. So we have drift term, we have Vlasov part, which describes interaction with mean field, and we have collisions. And it is not very...
So, general question. Isn't it that we assume the system is the loop or not? In other words, if it is this classical something with light occupation numbers, you can see, right?
The question is not very simple, because we should establish really the limits where our kinetic description works. So I don't think that we must assume that the system is dilute. We must assume that gradient expansion holds. It is as
there are several different functions.
Yes, yes.
And you're also ignoring off-shell processes this way, right?
Yes, but if you assume that your system is sufficiently homogeneous, then you have something like quasi-particle approximation.
Yeah, so it's.
So I think that this is, for transport theory, I believe that it is essential to have system which is sufficiently homogeneous in both coordinate and momentum space. It is essential.
The flow terms, of course, are
yeah.
You need that the time of scattering is short compared to time between scattering, and that is
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I think all this is solved.
Somehow dilute, because if it's too dense, the times of the collision will be too short.
Yeah, yeah. Because collisions must be independent, one after another. Yeah. So I think. But I am. I think it is a very technical question. But I don't think that I must assume that the system is very dilute. The point is that, in a sense, we can redefine what we call interaction. Because, for example, when you have hard interaction, we have something like initial state and final state radiation. But from point of view of kinetic theory, we should treat this whole process, including initial and final state radiation, as a single interaction.
If the system is too dense, the collision time will be too short, and then you will not be able to treat the collisions in an incoherent way.
But I think that what is important, that while there might be serious problems with collisions, when I'm interested in the high-frequency phenomena, then the mean field dynamics is essential. And then mean field dynamics, I believe, is correct even in very high density. So I think it is important. Because then the effect of collision, and if I'm close to equilibrium, then collisions are cancelled. They don't operate. And what is essential is mean field dynamics. But I must say, and I think it is more or less obvious, that the applicability of kinetic picture is a complicated problem, and there are no simple answers till now.
Yeah,
high frequencies, then the formation time of your objects will become of the order of the size of the system. So the coherence will be
very large. Yeah, yeah. Okay, but I don't have good answer to this. I simply
see, when you say be close to equilibrium, is true for the collisions treated in an incoherent way. Then
yeah,
the collision time vanishes.
No, but if I have interference, then I am very far away from any kinetic picture. So,
exactly.
So it is hopeless case anyway. Okay, so I have my transport equation written for electromagnetism. And then long time ago, it was established how this mean field part should look like for QCD. And what is nice that the structure of the, here we change usual derivative into covariant. And this simple multiplication, we change in symmetric multiplication. So we have anti-commutator. What is very nice, that equation for gluons is formally exactly the same as for quarks. There is only a different representation. So we have simply here 3x3 matrices, and here we have 8x8, but formally equations are identical. So we have three transport equations, and we have on top of it equation which describes self-consistent generation of mean field. And in fact, the only effective method to solve these equations is linear response analysis. And now what is important, now I assume that I have certain background colorless state. Ah, here is a mistake. Here should be A and B. So I have colorless, and then I have certain deviation from this.
So in fact, the soft group is present.
Yes, mean field, yes. Yes, gluons play kind of dual role. On one hand, they constitute this mean field, and on the other hand, they also behave like usual particles and contribute to the color current. So I think that those in such a simple-minded picture, those gluons which are on shell are treated as particles, and those which are far off shell contribute to mean field. And it is always a serious problem when you derive transport equations to make this division.
This is like a hybrid of two different limits.
Yes. And it's very difficult to make this splitting. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Can gluons go from being one to the other in your model? Can a gluon which was, can you get particles from the mean field or get they're just separate from beginning to end?
No, you have the equation which they are not independent, of course, because you have gluons which generate current.
Right.
And these gluons are also this mean field, so there is coupling between them. So.
But what about the ones that you're treating as particles?
Yeah.
Particle number change?
Then it depends how we describe collisions. If we, for example, have no collisions, then the number of particles is conserved. If we stick to only binary collisions, it is still conserved. So we should to have changing number of gluons or particles, we should have collision terms which at least processes 2 into 3. And as far as I know, no one was able to really, in a reasonable way, to write down such an equation. And it is a lot of experience in kinetic theory of liquids that three-body collisions are very difficult. So I don't know a really good description of multi-particle processes. No, this is simply, it is put by hand. No, for me, it will be very important that what I assume that it is colorless, but the shape in momentum space is in principle arbitrary. Physically, it means that there is a way that the characteristic lifetime, I would say, of this background distribution is much longer than the characteristic time of development of these fluctuations, which I describe. So if this is, time hierarchy is kept, then it makes sense.
You can put anything.
I can put anything, and only at the end I should this distinction makes sense if my fluctuations would grow much faster than a characteristic time evolution of this background distributions. So, exactly, it is expressed here. These conditions that these are only small corrections. And what is important, because my background is colorless, then current is only generated by the deviations.
Could it happen that this mean field is absent completely, identically zero?
Then we have free streaming. Then there is nothing conflicting. No, I have no collisions in my. I now skip the collisions, so I have nothing. I have free streaming.
Basically, this is related to the question, to the previous question. Is there some argument how to reasonably choose this and its
No. One obvious choice is to discuss this around equilibrium, and it has been done for many, many years, and this leads to variety of interesting collective phenomena. So I think it is. And now it is pushed to very high level of sophistication. What is much less known is what happens if we choose this background distribution in different way, because then we have completely different situation, and then we can. It is obvious that we can expect something completely in new. If we, for example, discuss modes around equilibrium, then basically the second principle of thermodynamics tell us that all modes must be stable. So must the system must always return to this background. But if my background is very different from equilibrium, then nothing like...
Normally, in kinetic theory, you can have only an equilibrium static distribution because of the collision terms. You have
No. Because I think what is very important that it is, what is the characteristic time scale of the evolution of the background?
Are you saying that any one of any n of p is a solution to the static equation? Any n of p is a solution to your equation? I don't understand that.
Yes, at zero order it is a solution.
But that depends on the collision term, doesn't it? Depends on the
No, I put collision term to zero, and the argument.
Oh, you put it to zero.
Of course, and the argument is so once again, I consider not this state is stationary, but it is stationary in this sense that the characteristic time evolution is much slower than the evolution of these fluctuations around it.
Well, if you put the collision term to zero, then I agree.
But wait. In plasma physics, in the real life, collisions are present. But it appears that there are high frequency phenomena which are much faster than any evolution due to collisions. And then, for example, in plasma physics, what people do, they in a sense, from externally create certain stationary state. For example, they have two beams. And this is kind of stationary. And of course, these beams evolve. But it appears that the evolution due to mean field phenomena is much faster than anything due to collisions.
Yes.
Of course. And it is my interest in here. I assume that I start my background mean field. Yes. I assume that first I need. First, I have to produce my partons, and once I have in the system, then I start my analysis. So what is...
In final temperature theory, you have the separation of scale and scale GT, or scale T, there are multiplication numbers, so there are one, and scale GT, there are multiplication numbers, and collective.
So what is important, we have linearized transport equations, and what is important, these equations can be exactly solved. I don't think it is very important. It's not very difficult to get explicit solutions. So maybe I will not discuss this for a long time. And then we plug in these solutions into expression for current, and then we immediately get polarization tensor. What is important that here this zero plus means that I work in collisionless limit. But to see how my results are sensitive collisions, I can put here finite imaginary piece, and to see how my results change when this is significantly different from zero. And here I have, now instead of having three different distribution functions, I have such a, I use one function which combines quarks, anti-quarks, and gluons.
Is it sufficient to put just something there instead of imaginary, but instead of zero, some number?
Yes, it exactly corresponds to collision term in relaxation time approximation. It corresponds that then instead of zero, there is one over relaxation time.
But EMNU wouldn't be transverse in that case.
Huh?
EMNU wouldn't.
Then there are problems start of various types. Okay. So now I work in collisionless limits, so the only dissipative phenomenon is Landau damping then. And what is very important that we have found with Marcus Thoma, that exactly the same expression can be obtained within hard loop approximation. I skipped the word thermal because it's no longer thermal. And it was not a real derivation. We simply took the expressions for polarization tensor is derived in hard thermal loops, but we plugged in arbitrary momentum distribution. And to our joy, we found that we get exactly the same result. However, there is only one extra condition, that there must be mirror symmetry of the momentum distribution, which is, as I understand, related to the demand that the ground state must possess symmetry. So now I think that it is nice that it is not only kinetic theory which gives this form of polarization tensor, but also the diagrammatic approach. And now I would like to discuss, having this framework, which I understand is not fully justified, I can now discuss some physical phenomena. So the first phenomenon I would like to say a few words is screening. As you know, screening is determined by, I use electromagnetic familiar notation. Screening is determined by this dielectric tensor. And what is important that I have real tensor. In the case of isotropic medium, there are only two components of this tensor, which is transverse part and longitudinal part. And then we have the screening is controlled by essentially one parameter mass. This is the Debye mass. This is all very well known. And now I would like to consider a little academic problem, which I like because it can be nicely solved. So let's imagine that we have a capacitor. And now we put this capacitor in a medium. And then what is funny in this result, this in fact is like in electrodynamics, that the field starts to escape the capacitor, is out of it. At first I thought it's a mistake, but when you, because it appears that the charge on the plate doesn't change when you compute the flux around the. So there is such a funny effect, and it is a bit unusual because when we think about screening, it is usually supposed that when we go close to the charge, then we don't see any screening, and we only see screening when we are far away. But it is only true when you consider the screening of a point-like charge. If the charge is not point-like but is on the plates, then even infinitely close to the charge, we feel the effect of screening. So it is, there are a few formulas how to get this result. And now having my dielectric tensor, I can compute this how the field changes. And of course, my interest in this capacitor was that some people think that it is kind of model of string, that we have such a homogeneous field inside string. So, but now what is important that I can, now the result depends how I orient my capacitor in space, because my system is non-isotropic. And to have calculations, now I must assume specific form of my momentum distribution to plug in this momentum distribution into my dielectric tensor. And to see, and I considered two types of distribution. One is distribution which is flat in rapidity, and another one which is flat in a longitudinal momentum in certain boundaries. It is to have something, a reference point to my calculations. And then what I did, I took the, and now I need densities. So I used old calculations, mostly by Wong in Haijing, who simply computed number of gluons. So now I have specific numbers of gluons. He observed that, that initially there are mostly gluons, no quarks. What Edward was saying, that it is hot glue scenario. So I have mostly gluons, and I can compute this screening masses, and then I observe that there is something funny happens. That depending how I orient my capacitor, I can have even something completely crazy, that my screening masses go to infinity. So something was seriously wrong. And then I will later show you that it happens when the system is unstable with to certain modes, then simply screening lengths are ill-defined. But if the system is stable, then I can get numerical values. And now I would like to stress this result, that screening lengths are very short. And it is, when I found this very surprising, because what is important? Here I took to my analysis only those partons which are produced perturbatively. I don't take into account all this soft stuff. And having, so it seems that number of partons with PT larger than 2 GeV, it is only a little fraction of all particles in the system. Yes, these lengths are very small. So having even, so taking into account only small fraction of all partons which I have in my system, only those perturbative partons, I got very short screening lens. So I think that this.
You shouldn't trust this number.
No, no, of course I don't. I don't.
I mean, it's not your number, but Wong and Company.
Oh.
Carrying this disregarded screening completely.
Mm-hmm.
For LHC, for example, you're not going to have 8,000 gluons.
Okay, but look, these numbers are. The number of gluons changed dramatically between RIC and LHC. But in both cases, I get screening lengths below 1 Fermi. So I think it is still remarkable. It is remarkable because I take only into account my hard gluons, those which are, according to Wong, it was those which have PT larger than 2 GeV.
But I want to repeat this question. Where did you get such a funny reading for Aquarius?
Pardon?
0.1 for Aquarius. Where did you get it? Small.
No. Okay, so but if I it was the purpose that if I take the larger value, this even shrinks. So.
Take realistic or what? I mean, we know what.
0.1 is at the Z-mass, roughly.
So if I take 0.3, then I make the screening lengths even shorter.
Because 0.1, I mean, we don't see incrementally till now 0.1. At left, it's even.
Okay, so because I wanted to be kind of consistent with this more or less perturbative scheme, but. It doesn't change the argument. So I think that having such a medium, I think it is. I simply think that this exercise shows that it's very hard to believe that in such a dense medium, you can still have something like string. So. Okay, now I'd like to move to another thing, which are quasi-particles, and I would like to discuss quasi-gluons or plasmons and quasi-quarks. And the standard way to discuss this, we have an equation for a field, and then the dispersion relation is given simply by the terminant of this part of the equation. So it is a condition for solvability of the equation. So it is rather for me natural to pick up only this part of polarization tensor, which is responsible for the electric permeability. And I get rather complicated dispersion equation because of this determinant. And again, in isotropic medium, everything simplifies because we have only two components, longitudinal and transverse, and we have two type of modes, longitudinal modes and transverse modes. But here I have rather complicated structure. And now it is very important what I already said, that the situation in principle might be quite complicated, that when we make such an analysis around equilibrium, then we know that from general principles that all modes must be stable. If something is unstable, it is a signal that something is presumably wrong in our approach. But if our system is out of equilibrium, there is no such a principle, and we can both have unstable and stable modes. And as well known, for dynamics, these unstable modes are particularly interesting. And I was looking through plasma literature, trying to find, to guess first, what kind of mode might be unstable. And there were also some other people interested in this. And then it appeared evident that a mode which has a chance to be unstable is such that electric field is along the beam axis, but the transverse is perpendicular to it. Pardon? Yes, wave vector is perpendicular.
Why is this presumed to be unstable?
I will show later. So now, having such a choice that I select my wave vector only along x-axis and my electric field only along z-axis, I greatly simplify the dispersion equation, and this is only such a simple. But still, it is not very, very simple to get the answer because I have singular functions under the integral. So it is always a danger that performing approximations, I can produce unstable modes. And then I found there is very beautiful method, so-called Nyquist method, to judge whether there are unstable modes or there aren't, not solving the equation. And this relies on analytic properties of this dielectric tensor. Maybe I will sketch the method. So we construct such an object. We have H is basically the left-hand side of my dispersion equation, which depends on frequency. And now we construct such an object, which is, of course, logarithmic derivative, and then we integrate along such contour. And there are unstable modes if there are zeros inside the contour, because then there are solutions with positive imaginary part. And now, so if there is a pole here, somewhere here there are many poles, then we immediately get this, that the value of this integral is proportional to the, is simply equal to the number of zeros of H within the contour. But on the other hand, it is constructed in such a way that, of course, the integral can be computed explicitly. And this delta is extra phase, which is gained when we, log H gains after we make the full circle around the contour. And then, referring to certain properties of H, now we see that there are two essentially different possibilities. So one is that we start with minus infinity of frequency, we go ahead here, and then we make a circle. And if it is like these lines, then we don't gain any phase, and because we return to the same point, and we know that there is no solution. But if it happens that the path, instead of this path, we have this piece, then it's seen that we make a circle around zero. So we gain the phase. And then it appears that there is a very simple criterion to have unstable solutions, that my that the left-hand side of my dispersion equation is negative at zero frequency. So it is called in plasma literature as Penrose criterion, but it is not due to Roger Penrose, it's another Penrose. So now it was simple to take kind of reasonable reasonable momentum distribution and to check whether my...
Just to understand, this is a necessary condition, or...
It is also sufficient.
It's also sufficient.
Sufficient.
Relies on some smoothness. It's not
yes. No. Essentially, it relies on analytic properties of the electric tensor. In fact, here this is everything works very nicely for non-relativistic system because there is always imaginary part, and in the case of relativistic systems, Landau damping is operative only when we have this the problem with phase velocity. Here is a certain subtle point, but. It's not so important, maybe. So I plugged in my momentum distributions, as I told you, that I have polynomial PT and either flat in rapidity or flat in... And I found that my conditions is trivially satisfied because basically these functions blow up because this inverse polynomial dependence, so they blow up at small pt. So I presumably should cap somewhere at pt minimum.
And just to take it, if you put an epsilon equilibrium one, then there is no.
Of course not. So no, the condition is it can be you can choose another distribution, and then you simply see that the unstable modes appears if you have a system which is non-isotropic. It is.
So any isotropic, for example,
wouldn't be... Yes. Isotropic system doesn't produce this instability. And I think what was important here, that this type of modes were studied in plasma physics, but for very, very anisotropic systems, like two-beam system. So it was not clear for me when I started this whether I can still have this unstable modes having system which has monotonous momentum distribution and no bumps. So now having being sure that I don't produce something artificial, I could approximate my dispersion equation and get approximate solution. And now it is seen what is this Penrose criterion. It means that this value must be positive. If it is more and more difficult to produce instability, this domain of wave vectors where the instability exists shrinks. And if it is isotropic, then it shrinks to zero. So I found that there is some stable mode. And what I also did, I tried to estimate what are having the same numbers which I used previously to estimate characteristic time of its development. And again, surprisingly enough, these times are short, so below one Fermi. So maybe there is a chance that there is enough time in my...
So this tau is instability time.
Yes, it is inverse of this imaginary part, so it tells me how fast it grows. So I learned that these times are short, so maybe there is a chance that my system lives long enough that the whole phenomenon can start. And now returning to your point, what is the physics behind? So I was very puzzled by this, what this really means. So let's start with something very simple. So
those times, how do we define the coupling constant
for just simple proportionality. Simple inverse proportionality.
Those values.
I took it for this very conservative value 0.1. Okay, you called it wrong. Okay, so I will change it. I will have even smaller numbers. Okay, because this paper was this part was done several years ago, and I haven't changed this. Okay, but maybe I should. So and now, what is the physics of this? So I would like to show you now more physical considerations. Why? What happens here in the system? So I would like to see what are fluctuations in my system. So I have my background distribution. And my background distribution is scalar neutral, so average current is zero. And now I am interested, what is the correlation between two currents? And now first I assume that I have no interaction with the system, and then therefore the only correlation between two space-time points is that one particle flies from one particle to from one point to another. Then it is, for non-interactive system, is the only source of correlations. So then I can compute this correlation functions. And now I consider specific situation that I consider currents which are along the beam. I take transversal direction of the wave vector and zero frequency. So I am interested in kind of constant fields. And then what I computed, I found that my correlation function is expressed through the equilibrium quantity, but it's multiplied by this factor responsible for strong anisotropy. So what does it mean? That because of pure kinematical reasons, certain type of fluctuations are strongly amplified. And what are these fluctuations? The picture is quite simple. So we imagine that we have streams of partons. And now what happens? If by chance, for example, two red quarks are close to each other and they fly along the beam, then because of large momentum along the beam, we immediately produce a significant current because my system is elongated along this direction. But once I have somewhere surplus of one type of charge, I must have deficit somewhere nearby. This means that I must produce a current in opposite direction. So I can say that due to pure kinematical reasons, my system has natural tendency to split in kind of filaments. It is what I found exactly with this spectral function, with this correlation functions.
We had a talk, one talk of the other program, which is called exclusion, and they have it called flow assisted phase transitions, and then there are onionization of onions.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
Which are made of layers.
So it is something like this. That is, yeah. Because of very strong anisotropy, I amp certain type of fluctuations. So okay, once I have it, so I have something, and now the problem is, and what happens next with this? And there is a very nice classical picture of this, which I will try to explain. So let's imagine that we have currents. I will use electromagnetic language, it's simpler. So I have currents flying in opposite direction. So once I have currents, so I have Z component of my current looks like this. But when I have current, I produce magnetic field, and there is this phase shift of magnetic field, and magnetic field is transverse to the plane. And now, of course, there is a Lorentz force acting on every particle. So and now let's look what happens to the particle like this one. If it flies in this direction, that it gives positive contribution to the current. If it flies in this direction, then there is a Lorentz force, and the Lorentz force bends this and so tries to move this particle to the center of the filament. But what happens if this particle flies in this direction? Then it gives negative contribution to the current. So it disturbs, it doesn't allow the development of this phenomenon. Then it appears that the Lorentz force acts in this direction, so transverse this particle to the neighboring filament. So we see that because of this, the currents in these filaments grow. And it is called in plasma, it is known in plasma physics as Weibel or Weibel instability. It was discovered theoretically in 59. And rather recently, it was found experimentally. So it is the physics behind. And now I am very much interested whether something like this can exist in heavy ions. And in plasma physics, this phenomenon was discovered observing characteristic radiation, which keeps this memory of the specific pattern of the currents. Of course, it is not possible in heavy ions. Soft gluons are converted into hadrons, so it is not a way to look for this. So it seems to me that the only way to look it for it is that this type of instability breaks the system azimuthal symmetry. And then when you so I have my heavy ions, and I break my azimuthal symmetry.
Would you like spaghetti?
Yeah. No. These are not spaghetti. These are rather such layers. But onion, but straight onion. So these are layers. Yeah. 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 Oh, yes, it is lasagna. It is a much better model. And then what you find that there is a pointing vector which points in given direction. So there must be kind of flow given in this direction.
What sets the scale of this? Is this arbitrary?
Scale of thickness?
The thickness, yeah.
No, I think, no. The scale is given. It is maximum, yes, yes.
Yes. You have an instability over a range of thickness.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But of course, it is always happens that this instability, which is the fastest, this wins.
But it's basically the divide length?
Something like, yeah. So it is given by this solution. It is precisely given. Huh? Yeah, as everything, as everything here. So my crazy idea is that if it really happens, randomly. So it is very important. So I have a kind of very specific suggestion for experimentalists to look for azimuthal fluctuations which are not correlated with the collision plane. And for example, we know that we have very beautiful phenomenon, this elliptic flow, but it is strongly correlated with the reaction plane. As it is measured, fluctuations which are independent of the reaction plane are completely washed out. But also, there is a bad news for me, that experiments which has been done right now, I rather cannot see anything like this because there is low PT cut. And I expect something what is very soft in PT because it must be a collective phenomenon. And Phoenix has a cutoff equal to 200 MeV. It is better with star, which is 100 MeV. But maybe if if it would be pushed a bit to the smaller PT, maybe there is. It is not quite like this because it is not exactly like this because it is group velocity which pushes my energy in given direction. So, but again, it is indeed of order of Fermi as everything, and I don't think that my estimate can be really quantitative. Yeah, it's not obviously. So what is the role of this? So maybe it is not even seen in the final distributions, but if something like this exists, then it is a mechanism which speeds up equilibration, because this phenomenon converts longitudinal energy into transverse direction, what is really needed for equilibration.
But if you take from the very beginning your distribution with this kind of lasagna pattern, would you get rid of any instabilities for sure?
No, just opposite. I would then make it very strong, dramatic.
But then you would be in the ground state, basically, with this pattern.
He's asking if there are any other instabilities. Once the lasagna forms, yes. Is it stable?
If it is formed, basically, it should be stable.
Yeah,
if there is nothing else, it should be stable, and you wouldn't get any additional instabilities.
No, I don't understand. Then if this lasagna is formed from the beginning, it grows.
No, it shouldn't grow.
Of course it must.
After you use your Nyquist integral, it gives you one mode or more than one? Simple question.
There's one period. So it should be stable.
No. Out of the linear regime. He's used linear
regime. I use only linear regime. So first I only know what happens at the very beginning. And then there is non-linear evolution of this whole complicated pattern.
The way to think of it is with your qualitative picture, with your force diagram, imagine that the lasagna has formed and it's gone non-linear and now it's stabilized by non-linear current.
No, it cannot, but within linear regime it cannot stabilize. Okay, then there is no instability anymore.
First.
No.
Why not do it again?
No, but you said.
Why not do it again in the sense of burn planes into
light? Maybe there is another possibility, another orientation. But this is a very, I know from plasma physics, it's extremely complicated subject. And I know that what they study is that some what is encouraging, that most of instabilities which are found in this linear approach are not completely destroyed by further non-linear evolution. It rather happens that non-linear evolution produces even more other unstable modes.
It sounds in some ways like Jeff's problem, which you talked about last week or the week before, I guess. And that's where I think, if you have an instability of the formation of a certain mode with a K vector pointing in the X direction.
Okay, so then there's, yeah. No, okay, but even, but you know, within my approach, I cannot have my stable lasagna in one orientation, because there is, this mechanism will work and make this current stronger and stronger in every layer. So I even cannot have stable configuration. It is possible, okay. Okay. No, but then I should consider kind of different problem. I should have different, I have my background is colorless. I should start with completely different initial configuration. So, okay.
Colorless and then organize in shapes. If not, why not square one?
Exactly.
Okay. No, the linearization goes very different then, because then in my background, because already my background configuration produces a field.
Well, that's true, but if you freeze the amplitude of this, you could just check if there is an instability, at least in perpendicular direction.
Okay, so.
And if you're right that this is the only instability, then there would be no instability.
No, because as it was said, in a sense, there is one instability, but there are all possible orientation of wave vector.
From homogeneous system, yeah. Then you start from your lasagna right away.
Okay.
Then you wouldn't get any perpendicular.
Okay. This I don't know.
Yeah. The short way of saying the question is: given that all possible wave vectors are unstable, why are you choosing only one?
No. Then it means that what I tried to show in this cartoon, that it might well be that first. Initial, I can immediately produce, maybe if there are indeed such a fast unstable modes, in different parts of the system I can produce such a domains, and everyone is oriented in different way.
And this is spontaneous symmetry.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It is possible, but
it's still possible. There wouldn't be any asymmetry. You just put many spaghettis close to each other.
So it might indeed happen that you have many modes at the same time with different K. I again restore asymmetrical symmetry. It's what you want to say, yes? Okay, it might happen. Okay, but let me finish. Yeah, this is. Okay, but let me finish because I'm running out of my time. So, since I found this in gluon sector, I thought, well, maybe there is something interesting in quark sector. And once this relationship between kinetic approach and diagrammatic approach was established, there was a way to compute a quark self-energy and to see what happens with quasi-quarks. And it is, so I have my dispersion equation for quasi-quarks. Again, we have this hard loop approximation. We have explicit expression for for self-energy. We plug in this spinor structure into my dispersion equation. And I have not very complicated equations to solve. And there was kind of disappointment. I started to play with variety of momentum distributions, putting them in and looking what I can get. And I was unable to produce any unstable mode. So I consider at the end extreme case. The extreme case, I have two beam system. So I have two beams of partons interpenetrating each other. Then the calculation is very, very simple. I immediately compute these self-energies, and I find explicit expression for my mode. And then to my disappointment, all modes are stable, and it is something even worse. This qualitatively, these modes are not dramatically different than in the case of isotropic plasma. As you remember, in isotropic plasma, we have such a, this quark modes first, if energy goes down and then climbs up. So the only difference is that my modes go down, so as this first part. And there is the only difference, and all modes are stable in this situation. So for the reason which I can't see any simple physical reason, gluon modes change completely when I go from isotropic to anisotropic case, while quark modes seem to be very robust and don't feel it. So I haven't found anything interesting in the quark sector. So these are my conclusions, that there is what concerns screening, that we have very strong orientation dependence on orientation of our fields. And the screening lengths are surprisingly short. There are unstable modes in the gluon sector. There is one unstable, particularly interesting mode. And quasi-quark modes seem to be stable, and nothing interesting happens with quarks. So it is the end.
Is it related to factor 2 in magnetic moment between quark and gluon?
Which factor 2?
That one is stable and other is unstable.
This is what I don't know. You know, there is a lot of No, the point is that there is a lot of experience in playing with this plasmon modes in plasma physics. But quark modes has been studied only in equilibrium situation, and there is a...
No, the apologetic explanation to the charge, field, force, et cetera, is true for any value of the charge. The difference between quark and gluon is only that charge and magnetic moment are different.
No, but what is important to my currents, of course, quarks contribute. Because my quarks here, when I had this picture, there are, of course, quarks, they are here. But the collective field is of plasmon type.
So then I don't understand the second problem. The second problem, there are no collective gluon fields at all,
No collective quark fields.
No collective quark fields.
No, there are collective quark fields, but the modes are stable.
There is magnetic field, right?
Yes.
That's the second problem. You have two beams of quarks, and the field which is created is
No, you missed the point. In this configuration... Okay, wait. In this configuration... I consider now... this is the self... the dispersion equation. So I look only for dispersion equation for quasi-quarks in this configuration. Of course, in this configuration, which I considered, there are unstable gluon modes, of course. My instability is extremely fast then. Everything is, computation is very simple, and it is even much easier to produce this. But exactly in the same environment, when I look for quasi-quarks, they are dull. Nothing interesting happens.
So take two beams and it generates magnetic field become modulated.
Yeah. But it is magnetic field, so it is part of...
So magnetic field is modulated, but quarks are not. Of course, but quarks are not. How that can be?
But quasi-quarks...
I think this might be indeed related to this electromagnetic moment, because when you just take a simple problem, put a gluon field in external chromomagnetic field, you get instabilities just by that. Even without any...
Yeah, so this is what I said, that gluons are very sensitive to external environment. And quarks are not, and quasi-quarks don't have this...
Yeah. Okay. Your experimental tests seem rather optimistic also. If you are a small peak, you are sort of 1,000 particles. Then you have a big peak.
Yes, it is what I was so, it was very, what it is exactly what I think is important, that this should be confronted with rather ideal azimuthal symmetry, which is given by simply independent particle production. If you have 1,000 particles and they are emitted independent, more or less independently, they produce ideally flat azimuthal distribution. For this reason, I hope that if there is even very tiny effect, it can be seen at this
But what effect are you looking for? You have to look for fluctuations, or?
Of on event by event fluctuations.
This is very simple. Yeah. Very, very simple. What people do looking for this elliptic flow, they look for this collective cause to phi, right? So what Sasha wants is that this elliptic flow, when b goes to zero, would not go to zero.
Zero, yes, exactly.
You don't really need elliptic flow. It's enough to look at cosine phi, not cosine phi.
Elliptic flow.
No, but it is not. No, but this. This technology for collective flow is not very good because they always correlate what happens with the first they determine the reaction plane.
I mean, cosine phi 1 minus phi 2, you look at phi.
It's not cosine phi. It has layers, so this direction and that direction is the same. So it should be cos 2 phi.
How will you separate this effect from the effects of the reaction plane? I mean, when you look at a single event, unless it has...
First, I go to the very central collisions, and elliptic flow goes down. And then I go to very small pt. Because of symmetry argument, hydrodynamic flow must be zero at zero pt. So, and this is what data show also. So I go to this domain where which I, in fact, tried to convince experimentalists in Berkeley from STAR, to perform such an analysis that you just look as a function of PT. At high PT, you should see contribution from jets, which also produce strong azimuthal asymmetry. Then you reduce PT, you should see hydrodynamic effects. And if something of this science fiction happens, then maybe something shows up at very small PT. But as it is, of course, very exotic, so.
They have done that. There is V2, which is average of cos to phi versus VT.
No. Because as V2 is obtained, you always rotate your events in such a way.
If you find the optimum, but your lasagna also has the optimum.
No. But my lasagna is oriented, is uncorrelated with reaction plane.
But this is how you find the reaction plane. You rotate the system and try to find x and y in which there is a symmetry. That x and y are different. So you interpret exactly the same thing.
But we learned last week from Kirill Tuchin that the way that the experimentalists actually do the analysis is not what you're saying. They just look at correlation.
I think it's a long story. I think that part of this argument is answered by Fenix collaboration, which measured not V2 in such a way that they measured correlation function correlation as a function of azimuth between two particles. So two particle correlation function. And they found that they have beautiful this shape predicted by hydrodynamics. So I don't know exactly the argument, but as I heard, I think that this is experimentally now answered. And this analysis did not rely on any determination of reaction plane.
There are also
methods for determining other methods. Use three particles forward. Yeah. What is important that at SPS, it was done in such a way that particles which fly forward are used to determine reaction plane, and particles which fly perpendicular are used for the analysis. So there are many ways, and there are also ways to see for fluctuations. You know, I'm very much interested in event-by-event physics for also another reason, and I know there are many sensitive methods to look for event-by-event fluctuations. So I think it is doable. It is not a big problem to see whether there are. So the question is, are there in low PT domain fluctuations different than those given by hydrodynamics? And I hope this can be answered experimentally.
What Phoenix did, they just see the jets. They see correlation when angle is small. It's not small PT.
They have also looked for this, as I remember, in different windows of PT. But what is important, that they have cut off PT at 200 MeV, and even at 200 MeV, they have a lot of problems with particle identification and so on. So I understand that it's exotic, but I think even if it doesn't show up in final state, it still might play a role in equilibration of the system.
But do you have a quantitative prediction at some level?
No, of course I cannot, I think, because...
Some values, I mean...
Yes, because as I said, I took from models
a
certain number of perturbative patterns, which these numbers are super...
I haven't understood yet what is the event by event. Just B2 on your side?
No, I think it can be done in a different way. There are methods to see whether there are strong fluctuations in azimuth which go beyond simply statistical noise. And
so
there are
just strong fluctuations,
yes,
but you don't have any quantitative statement about something about the statistics of these fluctuations.
No, because then I think whether I have one mode at the same time or several modes, and I think that I am not able to answer these questions. Not a lot, but I would expect that slow particles feel this and they move in one direction, I would expect, as pointing vector points out in...
It's very simple. I mean, the first question, so the event by event, you kind of explaining it so you have your layers, okay, with some k of this direction. So your emission pattern is modulated x versus y. Yeah? You look for each event. For each event, you do this cos 2 pi, and you find it is like a liquid flow. What Stashek says, it is not. In the liquid flow, they take all events and calculate.
And they first they rotate events.
And then they average over them. Yeah. And that is called the V2 average.
No, but what is important here is that first they find reaction play and rotate everything, and then to make.
That they also will do. Very many particles. So in each event, you find a quantity which is called B2, that is average of cos 2 phi of all particles, which tells you that there is a preferable direction. After that, you plot distribution of B2. In the case of a normal Poissonian with a small weather, etc., and rotation 1 over square root of x, that means it's all
this statistical noise.
And all events are the same and
yes,
at the same B2. If there is a phenomenon like that, there would be some
No, I have.
That's characteristic of any collective phenomenon.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Yes.
Not this particular
yes.
one.
Sure, yes. Sure. Absolutely.
This special one is that you can go there measured as a function of v, and large impact parameter gets big. Mm. If you continue to v equals zero, physical will survive, and all genetic effects not. Mm. So that would be the way to see if something is left. At the moment, there is nothing left, as far as I can see. But in principle, this
but
is
low, very low PT domain is not hasn't been till now studied. No, no. The smallest 100 MeV is. Yeah. No, but look, 100 MeV.
And it also kind of goes. It goes to zero as a function of d when d goes to zero, and it goes to zero when PT goes to zero.
Yeah.
No, no. Right? Forget resonance. You have thousands of particles. On that level. The fact that resonance is decaying to two particles. Yeah. This is two-body correlation
yes.
averaged out.
Yeah.
This is a multi-body effect of all particles together, all thousands together, with no x from y. And this effect is like that. It's a rhodinal in terms of the
nodes. If I just put your plot, your prediction correctly, what you predict is that self-momenta in distribution will be kind of lopsided.
Yeah. Okay, but I think it's not point to discuss this. How there are many ways.
Cosine will be zero. No. You need cos 2 phi. Because x and minus x.
I think it is this.
Look at the correlator.
Yeah. No. But I think it is not point to this.
Dipole is zero. You need quadrupole. Believe me. Yeah.
No, but there are also such a measures. There are measures. I think it is this subject for another seminar, how to precisely measure. The essential difficulty is that we have to very precisely subtract the statistical noise. But I think there are such methods, and I think that there are statistical tools to look for this. So I don't think it's a problem.
Okay, we should stop here
yeah.
and continue on the discussion. Okay, thanks.